what thing could not get me cancelled?
Okay.
You were meant to be the one who always cares. You're supposed to call when no one's there. Well, I did a lot of therapy when I was a kid. My real dad was very abusive.
Ladies and gentlemen, everyone far beyond and in between, welcome to the Lightless Lounge. It's me, Nikki.
And it's me, Wes.
And for all our Dutch listeners, you're probably like, what the hell is going on?
Why are they so international?
Because we have our first and last international guest of the series for the Lightless Lounge.
Yes.
Keen to Crow. You ever want to fall in
love?
Okay.
Very passionate, very good singer.
Yeah, starting artist. He's had some hits already.
Yeah, crazy on TikTok, 4.5 million followers.
I saw one video which had like 103 million views.
Insane.
This is our final episode of the season. It flew by.
It really, for me, I want to do more episodes. Uh-huh. Hopefully for you as well.
No.
Okay, that's it. Thank you for watching. Bye.
Bye.
And we just want to, I don't know, maybe some more international guests or whatever, but we're going to make a season two, I think.
Yeah, when? We'll talk about it.
Who's in charge of your agenda? Oh, wait.
It's you.
So we'll see. Well, let's see what we can do.
And if this is your first time listening or watching to the Lightless Lounge, you're probably like, what is going on? Well, this is our podcast and we're doing this in the complete dark. What happens is people get more open and often emotional and honest. And we just really get to the core of our that sounded sexy. Mm.
Get to especially the core. With a low voice.
Get to the core, honey. If it looks like we're looking at each other,
it's because I can follow your voice and I know where you're situated. But literally, if I reach out my hand like this, I don't see my hand. So, but you see shadows because we have night vision lights
here. Oh, yes, yes, yes. I do want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening and watching, because at one point we were the number one podcast of the Netherlands, which is an incredible honor. And this is a difficult market in the Netherlands because everyone's grandma has a podcast as well.
Yeah.
So thank you from us. Without any further ado...
Here is Kian de Crow.
Kian!
Lights out. Welkom in the Lightless Lounge.
Fucking hell. Okay.
Okay, then we're demonetized. Here we go.
This is nice.
Right?
Wow. I like this.
Kian, welcome to the Lightless Lounge.
Thank you. I closed my eyes there for a second. I see why people do that.
Yeah, right?
It's really relaxing.
Yeah, so today we want to get to know you a little bit more. For anyone who's tuning in and for anyone who might not have heard of your name, because I'm sure they heard of your songs, who is Kian?
He is a young astronaut from Southern California.
Okay.
Who
is he in the room with us?
He could be.
Okay.
You know, he wakes up every day, goes for a surf on the beach.
Okay.
And then begins his daily commute to NASA, which I won't tell you where the secret base is. It's a secret base.
Okay. What does he have for lunch?
Oh, for lunch. For lunch, he has a peanut butter and cheese sandwich.
And cheese.
Yes.
Good choice.
Blue cheese.
Oh.
Really strong. Stings
See, I
the
we
nostrils.
Could be friends with this guy, but not anymore.
The blue cheese got you off?
Blue cheese got me signed off.
Well, look, you asked for it. You just
it's the French part in you, the blue cheese.
It's the French part, you know? It's the French part.
We know you from your music. You were a musician before you used TikTok for your presence, but you really blew up via TikTok, right?
Yes.
What was the moment that you thought all balls on TikTok?
So I was a student studying classical music, and I'd always wanted to be a singer-songwriter as well. And I knew this guy. We got to know each other, like, and he was like a songwriter. And at one point, he got signed to a record label, and it was like the biggest deal, you know, to be signed. And it's something that every artist kind of like dreams of. And we were hanging out. I was like, you know, what is it like? You know, like this magical land of record labels and being signed. And what do they want you to do? And what's like the secrets? And he was like, they just want me to make TikToks. This is like 5 or 6 years ago or more than that.
Was it still Musical.ly or was it already TikTok, bud?
I think it had just become TikTok. Oh, yeah, yeah. Like it was early, early days TikTok. The second he said that, I was like, okay, I'm going to get on TikTok and I'm going to post a video a day and I'm just going to be doing that before a record label asks me to do that, you know? Mm. I'm going to be doing that. I'm going to be ahead of the curve. And then I went just every single day, just posting. And it took a really, really long time.
But it's a unique approach because you could also say like, hey, as a magician, magician.
I also like magic. Can you see me?
Yeah, you just disappeared. Where
exactly.
Are you?
Unbelievable magic.
Wow, that's it.
It's just the tip of the iceberg.
Impressive trick.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's also a bold choice because you could also say like, I want to make music and I want to get it out there, but I don't want to be a TikToker or creating content all the time.
I think it depends how badly you want it. If you want it really badly, then you'll do whatever it takes, you know?
Yeah.
But within your integrity and within your authenticity, the world of music and the industry is constantly changing. Michael Jackson and Ed Sheeran and Shawn Mendes and all these people all had a different route and time and way that they got to where they got to. So for me, it was just like, maybe this is what it is going to be for me.
And do you find that people recognize you as a TikToker or as an artist?
I think it's like kind of a mixture of both, I guess. It's definitely a lot as an artist now. And I think like that's something that you have to kind of work a lot towards, which is, you know, like making sure that like getting known for your own music and not just like covers and singing covers. And that's one thing that I kind of knew early on is like, I don't want to be like a cover artist and I don't want my biggest videos to be me singing someone else's song because that's almost like a waste of such successful sort of videos or ideas. So something that I always like was focused on, like it needs to be my music at the forefront. And I think I spent a lot of time thinking about that. Mm. And then obviously getting to, you know, put out a lot of music, create an album, go on tour, sell shows, and create content around that, it starts to make people really realize, okay, like it's not sort of like a social media TikTokery guy. It's like an actual artist who's using TikTok as his, you know, platform or his tool, just like Ed would have used YouTube and Shawn Mendes would have used Vine and YouTube and Instagram. Yeah. Like they weren't like, oh, Instagrammers or whatever. But I do have a lot of people also who'll be like, I love your videos. I love the stuff you do with like choirs and flash mobs and stuff. And it's a video that's very much the type of person that I am. It's like, I'm doing these like, yeah, it's my personality. Yeah. I'm doing these kind of like stupid, silly pranks. And like, I think it's really funny. And like, it's not really taking anything very seriously. And I think like, that's very much who I am. And I like that people know that as well.
And is it still as much fun as it was 5, 6 years ago when you started?
Yeah, definitely. It's probably more fun now because I actually kind of know what I'm doing and I can like pull things off and like, you know, think outside the box. And I've created also a sort of a community and a family there. So it's like really cool to kind of be able to see that as well.
What works best for you on those platforms?
For me, it's kind of like the out of the box kind of outrageous kind of thing, or like the real true emotional storytelling and being very vulnerable. It's kind of those two sides of the thing. It's like doing a silly little flash mob, you know, just like surprising people and kind of, or annoying people.
You brought back the flash mob, I think, right?
I did bring it back without kind of knowing that I brought it back.
I love it. I mean, there's like lovers and haters.
Yeah.
Oh, what side are you on, Nikki?
I mean, I love it. Although if I was in that situation, I'd be like, what the hell is going on?
Overwhelmed. I want to get out of here.
Overwhelmed. I would feel slightly awkward. What I'm wondering is because I saw that one of the videos got 103 million views.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Way
That's
beyond.
Only one of them as
Not
well.
Not bad.
But I'm like, sure the other one got like 102 million views.
I'm sure it did. Does that give you any extra pressure? Are you obsessed by the numbers?
I like to think of it like an extreme drug. Mm. Like when it happens, I'm like, give me more.
Shoot it up.
Inject it in my veins.
Yeah.
So no, not at all. I'm not at all attached to it. No, you know, like
stage one denial.
Once it happened, I was like, I don't think that'll ever happen again. Like we just stumbled on something, you know? Yeah. And then it happened a lot of times, but like it was like this phase where I think we kind of unlocked this new thing that no one was doing yet and probably perfectly hit the algorithm at what it was at that time. It was like the right place, right time, stars aligned, right and place. They just they just exploded.
What is your record? 70 million? I think 42 million on YouTube or something.
Like 63 maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, that
almost
hurts.
There.
That stings. Yeah. 63 million.
Yeah.
What is that?
Ah. Okay.
Humble break.
Okay.
That's a stinger.
How long have you been doing this? 5, 6 years? She's been on it 14 years. So I'll see you in a few years.
Okay.
No, it's crazy, isn't it, though? Like, when something does that, you're just like, what is happening? Like, it's so... Yeah. But it becomes like, you forget that it's you in the video, and that's yeah. like a video of you, because you're like, yeah. all... I don't even feel like the comments are even like...
About you.
Yeah, you're just like, who are these people? Like, they're like talking to each other.
The biggest transition is growing a platform and growing fans, and then having that transition into real life fans with your concerts.
Yeah. yeah.
How surreal was that?
Well, that's the only part that I really gauge, to be honest, because it's like, sometimes I forget like what followers mean, because sometimes they don't really mean that much. Not all of these people are going to buy tickets and come to my shows.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you gauge it by being like, okay, like what tickets can I sell? And that's the most unbelievable thing when it converts. It's like insane. And you're like, that's the goal for me, has always been the goal. Okay, I've got these, I'm building this fan base, but I need to convert it into something real, like shows, which is what I want to do. But sometimes I'm like out in public and like, I'll get stopped loads of times and I'll be with my girlfriend and then I'll be like, it's so mad, isn't it? And she's like, you do have like over like 6 million followers online.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it's true actually, I suppose. But I don't really think about that it's actually that. And then more people who, you know, when you have a certain amount of followers, way more people have seen you than the followers.
Right.
Like you might have that many people who actually clicked follow, but the amount yeah. of people who've seen your face over and over it's again is way more. The goal for me was always like making it, creating something tangible out of it, which is like ticket sales, concerts, seeing fans in real life. That's when you're like, this is so insane.
You released your debut album in August. I think it became one in the UK and Ireland. Was that the moment that made you realize that you were successfully transitioning from having content to actually people buying you? Or when was that moment that you realized I connected the two, the real life to the social world?
It's just nuts, because like to go number one is really difficult. And it was like something that I'd always dreamt of. And like, I almost didn't think it was going to happen. Like when I found out, I was really shocked, to be honest. Yeah. I was like, it just like felt like it's not going to happen. You know, like how could I possibly be number one? And yeah. sort of to see how many people like have not gone number one on their first album or things like that was when I was like, wow, like it's actually like, it's not that common. Or like,
yeah,
I think it was the first number one. And I think maybe the only number one debut album, or the first one of the year. It was just like, I don't know, it was super crazy. And it definitely was this moment where I was like, there's a lot of people who want to listen and yeah. want to buy, who want to support. And that was incredible. It helps you sort of solidify the fact that you're an artist, and even for the people around to see like, okay, this person's like really actually legitimately making music and an artist and yeah. albums.
And that not just that 10 second clip or that 30 yeah. second clip on
but
TikTok.
I think then the other thing, the biggest thing was probably touring, you know, touring, like I said, like you kind of are just like, okay, I guess we'll try and put these shows on sale and see what happens. And then suddenly they start to like sell out and you're like, oh wow. Like these people, actually these are people, and no one's going to that from like just 15 second video. Those are people who will see the videos, go and listen to the music, fall in love with the music or whatever, and listen to the album and stuff. And then they're like dedicated. They're like, oh, I want to see this album live. I want to see this artist live. And that's like when you sort of start to really feel like you're bridging the gap. And like, we're starting to do like really crazy shows. Like we put on a hometown show in Cork in Ireland, which is like my first ever stadium. And I'm playing like 15,000 people and it's sold out. And it's like
insane.
No one from Cork has ever played that, has ever headlined a show in there, in that stadium. So it's like this massive like accomplishment, but it's also just like, I don't really realize that that's me. Like I say these things like,
it feels out of yourself.
It feels yourself. Like people are buying tickets to Cian DeCroix's show, but like, I don't feel like I'm Cian DeCroix, you know, or like, I don't obviously think of myself at all the way that they think of me. Cause I would never buy a ticket to my own show. Like, you know, I wouldn't go
really?
See me. Well, yeah, I don't know. Like, I just don't, I'm not like I wouldn't say I'm like a huge Cian DeCroix fan, you know, like you have to kind of be like, okay, like I have to, that's who I am now. And it's almost like the fans who make you that, and the people who, the people coming to the shows, they're the ones who make you into that person, as opposed to yourself.
Do you like that person?
Sometimes.
Not always?
Do I like I don't know. I feel like it's like you're two different people. You can't be the 100% real version of you, because the version that people sort of become a fan of, it is you, but there's also a side of it that is like who they think you are, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I try to like love both versions, and I try to like align both versions as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
But I do also think you have to sometimes slightly separate the other version and almost get into like a...
like flipping a switch.
Yeah, like exactly. Kind of flip a switch. And it's not that you have to like change or whatever, but it's...
No, but I get what you mean. It's the artist.
Yeah. What people don't think about is... everyone always says like, oh, when you get famous or whatever, like don't change and stuff, yeah. You know?
But you will.
But not because you change, it's because everyone else treats you differently.
Yeah.
And it's like such a misconception that like famous people change. And it's like, no, we don't want to change. We want to stay the same, but everyone treats you differently. Therefore, you have to change to adapt to that, because suddenly it's like, you can't go for dinner without being bothered, or you can't walk down the street, or you can't arrive in a new city without, like, you know, it's all these different things. So suddenly it's like you do these things that people might think are like pretentious, or like say you get into a car and you get driven to the door and escorted into a restaurant or whatever. Not that I do that, but like I can imagine that, like, if I had in the past seen people like, doing that, like, oh, he thinks he's famous. It's like, no,
it's part of the role.
If you don't do that, you won't get to dinner. Like, I always feel so bad when I'm with like my friends, my family, my girlfriend and stuff, we'd be like, oh yeah, let's like go down the road, go to like a coffee, or let's go for some dinner or whatever. And I'm just like, we're not going to be able to walk there, even if it's 10 minutes, guys, like, because I'll get stopped, and then it'll take, and like, I don't mind getting stopped. That's not what bothers me. I love meeting the fans.
Yeah.
But I'm like, if we have a dinner appointment in 20 minutes, we have to take like a stealthy way there, because we won't get there. I'll have to stop. We'll be talking. We'll be taking photos. So then I'm like, so then you have to change the way that you behave in a way.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily love that part of that person of myself, where I have to kind of like, I have to now live in a slightly different way. And I know it's like, I'm so fortunate and it's super cool and I'm lucky, but it is like something that you're like not prepared for. Nobody can prepare you for that. Yeah. No one around you is prepared. No one really knows how it works. And you kind of have to figure it out. You kind of have to start to put the boundaries up and be like, listen, guys, I don't really want to walk because I'll get stopped, or I don't really want to get out here because like I just don't have the mental capability right now to talk to a lot of strangers. Or like, you always also want to give the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be that guy who
comes off as arrogant.
Yeah.
Or
and they're just, like, oh, I met Keen one time and he's so rude.
Yeah.
It's like, well, no, I just didn't sleep that night, maybe.
Mm.
Or like, I just had a fight with someone, or there's a lot of crap going on in my life, I'm in a bad mood.
Yeah.
And you don't want to present that version to like your fans and to the people who are really important.
Because
they
take it as you, the artist, being then arrogant or...
Exactly, yeah.
Blackout baggage.
We ask you to bring an item with you that's important to you, or that has a story to it. And ideally, you would give it to me first.
Okay.
If you can. Do you have it on you?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, it sounds heavy already.
It sounds heavier.
So I give it to you first, is it?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Be careful.
I'm going to be really careful. Are your hands out?
Oh, God.
Oh,
shit.
Oh, it's heavy.
It's really heavy.
Is it supposed to come my way, or can we just...
No. I know what it is. It feels heavy, hard.
Okay.
That's what she
rough,
said.
A little rough.
What the fuck am I holding?
You don't want to know.
Is this a skateboard?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, of course it is.
I'm trying to show it to the camera.
Yeah, I tried as well. Do you always bring it with you?
So I used to skate so much when I was younger, a teenager and stuff. And then I kind of like got injured and couldn't really skate anymore for a long time. And every time I went back to it would still like really like hurt my lower back, specifically where I have that injury. And it still kind of does, but I just love it so much. And I just started realizing on tour, like, I really needed one. So I just picked one up when I was in Paris recently. But yeah, I love it. I mean, it's something that I spend like most of my everyday as a teenager doing. So
what's on the bottom? Because I cannot see it now. Is it like a print or what is it?
Yeah, it's a really cool print. It's a Palace skateboard, which is like, I think like a London brand. It's just got like loads of people kind of across and like, but it's really like colorful. And then like the writing's all like silver and shiny.
I'll put it here on the couch. So, have you broken a lot of bones due to skateboarding?
I used to like just sprain my ankle a lot. I never broke bones, weirdly, but I mean, you fall so much. I'm surprised.
Knock on wood.
It's just so much fun. And it's just something that I find really like meditative and like clears my mind. And like even before show, like yesterday we were parked underground. Mm. So it was just like a huge like kind of warehouse and I could just skate and just have some fun. And
what do you do in preparation of your shows on a daily then?
Nothing really. Like I'll warm up a bit, maybe my vocals, but rarely. I usually forget to warm up, to be honest.
Is somebody then mad at you? Or is somebody saying you have to? Or you're just getting away with it?
No, my manager, when she's there, she's like, did you warm up? And I'm just like, no. And she's just kind of like laughs. I don't know. I don't always need to warm up. I don't always do it. I did yesterday and it really, really helped, to be fair.
So like there is some logic in there to do
some logic. And I had a skate.
Yeah, like I should do this more often.
Maybe this is working so well. Yeah. You're now on a world tour, right? So it's a different city every day, or what's the schedule?
Pretty much a different city every day. Yeah. More or less.
Do you get the cards before you get out to stage where they go, you're in Rotterdam now?
No, is that a thing?
Isn't that a thing where singers are doing like a world tour and they're like, Sweden? And they're like, it's Paris.
Somebody has to tell you which city you are in, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, where are we again?
Yeah.
Before I go on stage.
Yeah.
But usually I remember myself just like where we are.
Okay. Right.
But I do get nervous sometimes when I'm on stage and I'm about to say the city's name. I'm like, please let me start. I messed it up once.
You did?
I messed it up once. Yeah. I messed it up once in my life. I think we were in Boston.
Boston.
And I think for some reason I said Brooklyn, or it was the other way around. And I knew where we were. I just mixed up the two and I said it like twice
Brooklyn,
as well.
Boston.
Yeah. But then I just started making jokes about it and I was like, whatever. But I'm sure people were pissed off.
This is what you signed up for. This is what you wanted. This is why you got on TikTok. So you better enjoy it now.
Yeah. Oh no, I love it. It's the best. It is the funnest, best thing. I love going out on stage. It's just such a good, buzz.
We want to thank our sponsor of this week's episode, Anastasia Beverly Hills. Together, we're hosting an incredible giveaway action that's worth over €1,000. It's free makeup and €500 cash. Yes, for everyone who's watching the pod and you're like, oh my God, what is above her eyes? It's hair. It gave me back my brows after years of not having, well, you've seen it. So the brows are back and better than ever before. And I feel like a brand new woman.
Anastasia Beverly Hills basically sponsored this whole series, so we're very thankful for them.
Yes, very thankful.
Very thankful. And we've put a photo up on our Instagram where you can comment. If you follow their page and you follow our page, you'll have a chance to win the big prize.
Yeah, plus make sure you comment and tag a friend underneath the post so we know who's a makeup lover out there.
After 8 episodes, we'll go live on Instagram to pick a winner who won this amazing Anastasia Beverly Hills prize.
And this is the final episode. You better hurry up and comment and like, and who knows, you might be our winner. You mentioned that you were skating a lot when you were younger. What was your youth like? Who is young Kian?
How far back? Because it gets pretty dark.
However far you want to go, honey.
There's no problem because we also have a segment, The Darkest Hour. So if you feel like it gets that dark.
We actually do, so if you want to go there.
The Darkest Hour.
So as a kid, I grew up mainly like with my mom and my brother.
And your mom is French, right?
My mom's French, yeah. And my brother and my stepdad. My real dad was very abusive, so I didn't have... I did have a relationship with him for quite a while, but he was obviously very abusive. So that was something that we were trying to escape for a long time. So that was like one huge part of my life, that and that happening for a long time. And my mom trying to get sole custody. That's all right. So that was kind of like this one side, which really defined like who I was and who we were as a family and what we were trying to achieve and strive for and get away from and what we were dealing with. And obviously my mom was living in Ireland, a single mom, French. So the system was like not in her favor. Ireland has also changed a lot in such a short amount of time. And even back then it was really
conservative.
Very. Yeah. And you know, you'd be up against these, my mom would be going into court and there'd be like judges who were like old white men who would just say horrible things.
Keep your family together or what you're doing.
Terrible stuff. They were all just influenced by the church and all this crap and super misogynistic and you know.
Yeah.
So there was that side, but then there was also a wonderful side where my mom and my brother and I were so close because of all of that. And we had this extremely strong bond and music was something that tied us together. I obviously fell
in love. She's a classical music player, right?
My mom's a piano player and a flute player.
Yeah.
Wow.
My brother is a classical violinist. Wow. And we all did like classical music. I did classical flute. And so there was a lot of that, like that got to save us and orchestras. And my dad also is a classical musician. So he was like...
Are we talking about your stepdad?
No, my real dad. Okay. He was entangled in that world as well, which obviously made it quite difficult.
Okay.
And there was situations which were obviously really difficult at times, but music still was something that like definitely saved us, allowed us to escape and stuff. And I was very like super outgoing, super bubbly. I think I always just like wanted to make like my mom laugh and like cheer her up. And then like, I was kind of just like doing so many mad things. Like I would be like playing classical flute in like an orchestra and like doing all these like intense classical music competitions. But then I'd also just be like a skater on the weekend, like, you know,
and living your life,
living my life like a teenager would like, it was so random, you know, like on a Sunday I'd wear a tuxedo in an orchestra, and on a Wednesday I'd wear like skinny jeans and skate shoes and a backwards baseball cap. Mm-hmm. And like on a Friday I'd wear like suede boots and like a top hat and a gate, you know. It was just like, I was like five different people.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you found it difficult that since your biological dad was, you know, intertwined with the classical part of the music, if that felt difficult maybe to sort of like tap into.
I think like all of those parts of me definitely just felt 100% me. And I still feel like all those people.
Yeah.
I was a skating, flute playing, songwriting.
It's a long title.
You know, totally.
It's
fine.
Like Daenerys Targaryen, the Breaker of Storms, and
of the Seven Seas.
The Seven Seas.
Have you watched Game of Thrones? Or
Okay,
got it.
Exactly.
But it's good. But you can be all
the Breaker of Chains.
Breaker of Chains.
So you were all that.
I was all that. And I realized with time that that's just who I am and who I'll always be. And I love that. And I think in the classical music, I was lucky enough that, like, that really was sort of my attachment to my mom mainly, and her identity and who she was and what she inspired me to be. And, you know, she was such a high level, and she did the highest level of classical studies you could do. And she had done things that nobody else, even in the classical music world, had done before. And like, she really was sort of this like elite prodigy, you know. And she obviously got entangled with my dad, and he kind of, you know, in ways ruined the career that she could have had. And she obviously went on and had a different amazing career as well, but maybe not the one that she could have had as she stayed in France and that she was kind of leading up to. But also, I think if she had had that, she may not have had me and my brother, and we wouldn't have had the relationship with her.
It's all happened
for
a reason, probably.
You know, it all happens for a reason. Yeah. And I think...
What age were you when your stepdad came into the household?
I think I was pretty young. I was like 5 or 6 maybe.
Okay. So you're almost born and raised with him being the,
definitely,
the father figure in the house. Are they still together?
Yeah, they're still together. Yeah.
I love that.
I think it took a lot of time. It was very complicated because there was the abuse of my real dad.
Yeah.
The moment my stepdad came into the picture, he was told very quickly, like, you're not allowed to get close to the kids because like the court could use it against you, or their real dad could say that it's confusing it with you and all this kind of stuff, you know? So our relationship began very difficultly because he wasn't basically allowed to. It's already hard enough to be a stepdad.
Mm. Yeah.
Never mind coming in and being told you can't even really like show any affection to these kids.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't get close to them because like that could get confused or mixed up.
And did was he able to do so, or did it change over the years?
Well, he definitely, like, we didn't know this as kids, obviously. Yeah. So he definitely had to like keep his distance. And I think at times it was probably difficult because he was like a loving partner to my mom and supporting her in this rock. And they were, you know, they were madly in love, and he was like really like came and kind of saved us. But at the same time, you know, he had sort of his like niece and nephew that he was like so fun and loving with, and like he was like the fun uncle. But then with us, he wasn't like the fun,
he couldn't
loving
be.
Dad really. Yeah. He was more just kind of
formal.
Yeah, formal, and like empty the dishwasher, like clean the bathroom, you know, do the stuff for your mom, like she expects you to be better kind of thing. And like that was hard for us, and obviously for him as well. It took a long time to get over that and get through that, even though there was still so much love there always.
Yeah. But do you see him now as a father figure?
Definitely. Yeah. 100%. I mean, he's definitely like, he's the man who raised me. Sometimes I see myself and I'm like, oh, I kind of have his ways, you know, even though I'm not his blood, but it's like, what does that mean? You know, and
I have that with my stepdad too.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, he raised me too.
Yeah. And it's funny because I always, my English is not so good, but I always get thrown off by the word stepdad and like real dad or biological.
It has a negative ring to it.
Yeah. It does. It feels like a secondhand or like
dad 2.0.
Yeah, something like that. Or like, as you mentioned, your biological father, you call him real dad. But are you still in contact with him or?
No, not at all. God, no. I don't even like. It feels weird even calling him dad. Like
yeah. Right.
Dad.
So if you explain, like, I call him
like my father or like my birth father or whatever.
Yeah. I call him by his name.
We call him, you know who. That's what we call him.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, really. Okay. Yeah.
That's what, like, since we were kids, that's always like what we've called him. You know, and he's
out of the picture.
Yeah. If anything, my stepdad's the only one who calls him your dad or your father. Sometimes he'd be like, oh, I saw your dad, your real dad today.
Yeah.
And I'll just be like, oh, like, miss him. Yeah. It's a joke, you know? But it's like,
well, there's, even when you're now getting older, there's no guy in, no desire in you.
No,
because a lot of your songs are based on your family situation from home and growing up. And I can imagine that maybe you get to a point where, like, maybe I want to have a conversation with him as an adult.
No, there's no need. It's kind of just like that kid who bullied you when you were in, like, when you
high
were
school or
in,
whatever.
Yeah, like, you don't need to go talk to that person to be friends with him. Like, I don't really care. Like, yeah,
he doesn't deserve it.
He's just like, yeah, it's not even that he doesn't deserve it. It's just like unnecessary. Just because he's like the guy who might have some of his blood or whatever, and he once dated my mom and they had a kid, like, that's all it is, you know? Like, I don't need to have a relationship with him.
He got his chance.
Yeah, I don't really, yeah. And he had his chance so many times. Yeah. And I also know, like, we gave him second chances a couple of times. It's not like we didn't do that. But he's just, you know, like, narcissistic. You know, to be honest, the only emotion I really feel towards him now is sort of like, sadness and pity. Like, I feel sad for him. He could have had two wonderful kids and a beautiful wife and a family,
right?
And he didn't. And to be honest, I don't even know if it's like his fault or was he born with like issues or did something happen to him when he was a child? Did he go through things that turned him into this horrible person? I do think that's why I think, like, people often deserve another chance, or they deserve to for forgiveness, or they deserve to redemption or whatever. But, like, you know, in my dad's case, like, he never would admit that he did anything wrong. It wasn't just like physical abuse. It was like sexual abuse. It was stuff that's like unforgivable. And that is like, well, you're obviously fucked up. But the thing is, that's not normal. So there's obviously something wrong with him.
Yeah.
And whether something happened to him, which I think probably some stuff happened to him when he was a kid. He went to this very strange school in Ireland, which there are
You hear, right? That when they're abusers, they're also being abused.
There's a big chance, So, like, you know, but that's not my problem, you know?
No, that's his problem.
You don't get to be a piece of shit.
Yeah,
exactly.
You.
But it's like, that's why now when I'm older, sometimes, like, I don't care about he's like the stuff he's done. Like, it's horrible, not just to my family, to a lot of people. And I think, you know, every now and then I hear stories and it makes me sick, but sometimes I just like feel like I'm like, it's sad for him. It must suck. But to be fair, like, when you're like that, you probably don't even have the emotions to care
or to know what you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. To you, you're just like, whatever.
Does that, all these stories that you're just sharing with us, does that inspire you to do these songs right away, or did it take you some time to cope with everything and then put them in a song?
Well, I did a lot of therapy when I was a kid. So pretty much immediately my mom put me and my brother through therapy, and we went through therapy for a really, really, really long time, like every week for years. So it became really normal and easy to talk about. If anything, I just find it awkward telling other people because I don't want to make them uncomfortable. And people are always like, oh, I'm sorry and stuff. And you're like, it's fine. It's like another life, you know?
Yeah.
Writing about it, I always knew it was something important to me because I know that it would help people going through anything similar. And I know people who have gone through similar things or who are going through similar things who tell me how much the songs help them and make them not feel alone. And, you know, that's why I'm always trying to tread a fine line between like telling songs that are these really vulnerable, real stories about something that's maybe not so relatable, but then other people can potentially take it for themselves.
Yeah.
But those who are also going through exactly the same thing or really similar will know that, like, no matter what they're going through, they can come out the other side and things will be better. They're not alone. It's not their fault, you know, like,
yeah.
And I think that's an important thing to tell other people and like it's not your fault, like you're not a bad child. You don't have to feel guilty for feeling whatever emotions you feel, and like no matter what you're going through, you can come out the other side. I truly believe that, and that was something that I kind of felt like is what I wanted to represent.
When I listened to your album, you have put amazing songs on there. What really stuck with me was the song For Your Mom, and I felt like you describe some sort of responsibility and noticing the pain that's still in your mom, but also the responsibility that you just mentioned to make her laugh. Do you feel that responsibility, or is it just my imagination from the song?
The hardest part about everything that happened was the fact that my mom still blames herself and still thinks that she wasn't a good mom.
Yeah.
Still thinks that she could have done things differently, could have been better. And like that annoys me so much because I think it's crazy that she thinks that. Like she did so much. I think she did everything right. She really gave us everything. She did her best to give us a normal life, to give us this like sunshine on the other side of everything dark that was happening. And like, it wasn't her fault and she couldn't have known. And once she knew, she did everything to save us. And I think like, sometimes it just breaks my heart, but annoys me that she still blames herself. And I just want to like shake her and be like, will you please just snap out of it, like just move on, just like we are okay, and you don't need to blame yourself. And I think making this album was kind of really important for me for even that reason, just for my mom to hear it and to write these songs for her to hear and for her to kind of realize how much I meant that. The biggest thing this album probably did was it definitely did help my mom heal, and it helped her maybe for the first time ever in her life realize that she wasn't to blame and that she could move on. And I think when I realized it was doing that, it was something that I was like, I did the right thing.
Psst, a quick reminder. Along this podcast, we also have our own cosmetics brand, Nimya by Nika Tutorials, skincare and makeup products for beginners or pros.
And our brand is genderless, so it's for everybody.
We even often have bundles where you can get a lot of discounts. So what are you waiting for? Get your Nimya on. Go to Nimya.com. Nimya.com.
See you there.
Do you want children yourself? Do you want kids?
100%.
Yeah.
My brother just had a baby and it was like the most magical full circle moment. And well, he's like one now. I may have actually missed his birthday.
Oops.
I don't even know what date it is. What's the date today?
7th of November, Tuesday.
His birthday was in the 4th. I'm a terrible uncle. No. He's only 1 year old though, so he won't even know.
No. You have 6 more years before
you notice.
But your
brother will know.
My brother will know.
No, but your brother will understand as well.
Yeah, yes. Well, I wished him like happy birthday like 3 days before and 2 days before. Yeah.
There you go.
They didn't even invite me to his birthday party, so.
Wow, there you go.
God, when he had his son, it just like, it just is so beautiful to watch my brother be a dad and like to watch him just love his child more than anything in the world and like just be like the best dad ever. Like he just loves him so much. And like, I love him so much. So I can't even imagine how much my brother loves him. Like when I think about him, I just like want to cry. And when I see him, I just want to be like, I am going to protect you forever. Like, you know,
this sounds like somebody who's ready for kisses himself.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, God. But
how long have you been with your girlfriend for now?
Over 3 years.
Oh yeah, okay, got it.
Well, it's more that I couldn't have a kid now, like being on tour. Like it's just crazy. Like life is not.
Never say never, Kian.
Never say never. Yeah, who knows? I mean, you'll make it work, but it's not the time where I would plan and be like, you know, I've just started touring and I've just started like, there's still so many things that I'm striving for and I want to achieve, but it's something that I definitely would love to do. And I'd love to adopt as well. That's something I think would be really, I've thought about that so much and I think it would be really important to me as well.
Another song you just released is about a friend of yours that you lost. Mm-hmm. I know Wes and myself watched this music video last night and it was not the right choice to do right before bed.
I mean, it's beautiful, but it hits so hard.
It hits so hard.
Yeah.
Can you take us through the story a little bit?
So the music video was kind of something I thought about a lot and I knew it had to be a pretty close representation of the real story for me. It was definitely very tough to get that. Became a really quite emotional and beautiful experience, but it was very heartbreaking and difficult.
Yeah.
But I knew early on when I started speaking like with directors and stuff like that about what I wanted to do, that it became evident to me that I wanted to tell a story.
That story, yeah.
I wanted to tell that story, but I wanted it to be a little bit more hopeful than what actually happened.
Mm.
Sadly, what happened is that I did lose my friend and he did pass away and he succeeded in taking his own life. But I felt like in this story, I wanted to sort of represent something that like, it doesn't have to end that way.
Yeah.
And although it goes there in the end of the video, we're back together and, you know, and it sort of ends in this moment where we're together and in this moment.
So tying that message, like you could go that low, but it doesn't have to end that way.
Yeah. And like, just sort of trying to tell people that like, don't go there. Like it doesn't have to be there.
It does
and you
get
can
better.
imagine just like that. This is what you'll miss out on, this hug, this love, this person, these people who care about you so much.
Yeah.
And it was just like that hug I wish I had with my friend, you know, like so many times I kind of dream and I wake up imagining like that he is still
there.
Here. Yeah. And it's like, but he's not, you know, and it's crazy. And it's like, it was just, a very important story for me to tell. And that I knew that hopefully it could like reach even one person and help one person and maybe save a life. And that was like the important goal for me was to just try and turn something positive somehow out of
that dark situation.
Yeah.
Twilight Delights.
What do you do before you go to sleep at night?
I think the only thing that actually like puts me to sleep is reading.
Oh.
Like I've started reading a lot more because I never really read, to be honest. I was really like I found it really difficult, but now I started spending so much time on my phone, like in cars and cabs on the way to something, in like a bus, a van, whatever. You travel so much as an artist and you're just like on your phone. And I was like, I just need to get away from
it. What
do
you read then?
I read mainly like autobiographies or sort of like kind of businessy self-help kind of books, but not like self-help, more on the business side. So like Atomic Habits, I love that book. Or like I read this book by Stephen Bartlett, which is called Happy Sexy Millionaire. These kind of like, I like the business ones, but ones that are kind of like within the sort of just interesting ways of thinking. And now I'm reading Shoe Dog, which is the story of the founder of Nike, which is incredible. It's his own memoir. I read like the autobiography by David Grohl. I loved that as well. I like stuff that just kind of aligns with my life because I find it interesting.
Yeah.
It either inspires me or I can relate to it.
A dark debate.
We're running through the segments and we're doing this on purpose because we have a time crunch. Sorry about that. But it's a dark debate, which is something that's debatable. AI is the best thing that ever happened to the music industry.
Wow. I would say it hasn't fully happened yet to the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's happening. It's starting to happen. I definitely wouldn't agree though. The best thing that happened to the music industry is obviously just good artists and songwriters making music.
Would you describe it as positive or negative for the industry?
I think it can be positive, to be honest. I think there's a lot of stuff in the industry that's so flawed and so flawed by humans that could be easily solved and made better and made more efficient.
Could you give us an example for that?
Ooh, what thing could not get me canceled?
Sorry. Okay, so no. There's not the intention to ask you that.
I've thought about this and I've spoken about it with friends and stuff like that. And there's a lot of interesting, for example, there's a huge industry of artists that take pitch songs.
Yeah.
So they don't write their own music. Then the music is all written by just other songwriters.
Yeah.
Like random people who just are songwriters and they pitch and they pitch.
Almost
they,
like ghostwriters.
Ghostwriters who just try and like send songs and stuff. I think if you're going to just take music from other people or other people are going to write songs, why not just get a robot to do it?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Why not just get AI to do it?
Yeah.
It's so much better. It's more efficient. Who cares if it's written by, like, if you're going to take a song that doesn't mean anything to you and like
anyway,
you didn't write anyway, might as well just get it from a robot. It's and I'd probably get canceled from that.
I like your approach because it's less defensive.
I'm not against it. And then there's no one's getting hurt. No one's arguing about like well, who's getting percentages and points and blah, blah. Robot doesn't care. Doesn't have to get paid or anything. You know, so I think there might be a side to that where that'll help a lot of
As long as they're honest about it then.
Yeah.
That it's written by AI.
Who cares? They're never honest anyway.
Yeah.
Like most artists who don't write their songs still pretend they do. So
yeah.
But then if AI helped write you the song, would you still be up for a Grammy?
It depends what the Grammy is, though. If it's like best new artist, that's nothing to do with
the song. Best AI song.
Huh? You know, they could probably have best AI song. And I mean, there are like, there's the new Beatles song, which was partly restored by AI, I'm pretty sure. So
exactly.
We're and that brings a that brings a tear to my eye. So, you know, that's like, that's a positive thing. And I don't know. I think it just needs to be like, maybe there need to be like regulations and
what we're up for
like that. But there's always going to be, it's always going to go there, you know? And it's like, if AI can write better songs than humans, then...
Well, I doubt that though.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it will. Maybe it'll help, or maybe it'll give you ideas, or it'll be...
Yeah. And my question is, how many songs have we already enjoyed that are made with AI that we don't know of?
Since the start of my songwriting career,
people
have always used the internet to help them write songs.
Right, yeah.
Everyone gets Rhyme Zone up. Everyone gets like...
Rhyme Zone?
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone gets Rhyme Zone up. It's like...
I've never heard of this. I need this.
You just type in a word and it gives you all the words that rhyme or indirectly
rhyme. Oh my God, we need this for Nimya. Yeah.
So it's like people do that, or you have like... there's an app called, like, I think Rhymer's Block or Writer's... I don't know.
Yeah.
And you like write your word in and it'll give help you out suggestions of words.
Oh my God, I love this.
Of words that rhyme, because it's like people will do that because they're like, what if I don't think of that one best word that could be the perfect thing? I don't know. Like, so, and to be honest, I think like it can be a good thing because it's like, you can then focus on other things. You can focus on the more creative side.
So it's not the best that happened to the music industry, but it's a good tool.
Yeah. It's definitely a good tool, I think.
I have one more tiny question, not tiny, but it's a question. When looking at the future, what do you see? What do you want to see?
Besides all the Grammys.
There's definitely a lot of collaborations I dream of. Like, I think that's one thing that I think about a lot is definitely collaborating, because it kind of makes you feel like you're achieving a lot of things that you've always dreamt of. I always have wanted to collaborate with Eminem. So that would be, that'd be like an epic goal, but I don't know if he'll still be going, making music by the time. I'd love to work with Ed Sheeran.
Yeah, you toured with him, right? Yeah.
Yeah. We toured together and we've spoken about like writing stuff and things like that. And
that's going to happen.
Maybe one day I'll be at a, you know, at a collaboration level.
Are you now acting, or like you want to do that? Is it already dropping more? Because we cannot see your face.
There's so many things I would love to do. I think
Wait, let's go back. Wait, is Ed Sheeran, how far are you in the process of collaborating?
Collaborating, I don't know. And I don't know if it's something that he
would want to.
Would do.
I don't know.
Like, yeah, I know he does collaborate for sure, but I don't know if he'd, I don't know if he'd want to collaborate with me, but
he
like
would.
Maybe one day, yeah. But I think I have to earn my stripes first for sure.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
To be fair, I would say he's the kind of guy that would like charitably collaborate with someone to help them, and he is that kind of person, 100%. If anyone was going to do it, he would be the person to say yes, cuz he's so lovely and just. But I myself, I think that I would want to earn my stripes and like earn that and, to, you know, maybe like get to a point where that would be something that would be cool for us both. And yeah, there's a lot of dream things like that that I would love to do. And even just perform on stage with people, you know, like I've thought about, I'd love to like perform, you know, with The Script or Codeline or like these artists I grew up.
What about Eurovision? Like, would you do Eurovision?
Yes, Eurovision.
No.
No, why not? Wait. That would get you famous.
Oh, this is a
more
hard no way. Why
not? Yeah, why not? No.
No, not my vibe.
Oh, not your vibe?
I just don't think I don't know. I just feel like I want to earn, and I don't want to just like go on a TV show and then be seen by millions of people.
It helps,
but I don't want the help. I want
not
to do
that
it
way.
Myself.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
I want to do it myself. I want to write good enough songs. I want to think of my own marketing. I want to do the stuff all myself and be like, I built these millions of followers, not a TV show, you know? And it's fine if other people want to do that. Like everyone has their own desires, but that's one of, for me, I want to feel like I
done
did it myself, you know, and everything.
I still think you would rock it, and Ireland needs to win.
Yes,
so
hold on.
I would.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, BBC. No, he doesn't want it. No.
Is it BBC? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotta go.
I'll be honest. We thought about it once. I thought about it once.
Ooh. I still think you should reconsider.
I'll tell you the time that we thought about it. We thought about it after the success of All For You and before I'll Be Waiting was going to come out.
Mm.
And the question we asked ourselves, even with the label and stuff, was like, do we believe enough in this, in me as an artist and in the power of these songs? Mm. Or do we think that we need Eurovision to get some sort of success? Yeah. And we voted to believe in I'll Be Waiting and then the power of the music and what I could do myself.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad that we did. Yeah. Because obviously that song
but it could
went
be
massive.
And not or. I mean, and
look at Loreen.
Look at Celine Dion or ABBA or whatever. It could be and.
Different
and,
times but, though. Different times. Yeah. Rather just sell out my own arenas and stadiums and just be like, I did it.
Okay.
My way, you know?
I did it my way.
Okay. Final question. We have a dream of being in this room with a singer that could sing two or three lines a cappella.
Yeah.
Would you be open to that? Or would you?
I can try, but I don't know if I'm warmed up. Wow. I never think singing a cappella sounds that good, but I'll give it a go. One of my own songs would make sense.
Yes, for sure.
Oh, I know. I'm gonna do a wild one.
Oh.
Well, not a wild one, just one that people probably don't know.
Oh.
You were meant to be the one who always cares. You're supposed to call when no one's there. You were meant to say I love you at the end. Always my friend. You were meant to be the one to say I do. After something old and something blue, all I borrowed was my time with you. There's nothing new. If you're gonna let me down a little more gentle, darling. 'Cause it's killing me now, I'm not the one who gets to call you, darling. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh my God.
Thank you.
That's a good little a cappella one, actually. It's kind
that
of
that was
a bit like,
really good.
And it's such a unique experience for us being in the room and then just hearing your voice is
talent.
Insane. Yeah.
Thank you.
I haven't been around talent in a minute.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Kian, thank you so much for stopping by the Lightless Lounge. It was such an honor having you here.
Thanks for having me. My absolute pleasure. This is the weirdest.
Isn't it?
Thing ever.
But was it fun?
It was so much fun. I loved it. I really do love podcasts. So this is a very interesting, very cool way to do it. I really, really enjoyed it. So thank you.
And your
so
eyes
much.
Don't get used to it, right? You're still in the dark.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, we need to talk about this because you ask this every week.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Me? Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry.
You do. Every week we end up like this. Anyway.
Okay, sorry. Oh, sorry. Okay. That's right. Okay,
I think it's clear by now that you can't see shit.
Yeah.
All right.
Exactly.
Kian, thank you so much. Good luck at your show tonight.
Thank you.
For everyone we'll who's watching or listening, please don't forget to give a great rating, leave a comment. We read them all. And comment down below what your favorite song is by Kian.
Yes.
And anything else from you, Mr.?
I'm thankful for this final episode of the season.
Oh, don't say it.
Honored for you to be here and enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you, Nikki, for everything.
Yeah. Tout à fait, Nathalie.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 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 Hey.